Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 3rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Move Midland. Let's see academic turnaround results. New nonprofit. The bond is not our main topic. It is the topic at hand. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. A new Midland nonprofit has been started to help Love Midland and Move Midland. Move Midland is a 501c4 organization dedicated to making Midland better. That includes coming up with a way to improve schools in terms of performance and facilities. And Move Midland believes that can be done without approving what is, by far, the biggest bond in the city's history. Move Midland is not an anti-tax organization or one that believes Midland's best path is not doing anything to improve development. Its conception goes back to the Midland City Council's decision to not accept tens of millions of private dollars and deny the Hogan Park project. And while it opposes the largest Midland ISD bond ever proposed by a factor of more than two, it is not against school improvements. According to its website, Move Midland proposes the following solution. The district should first build an elementary school from its roughly $80 million in unrestricted surplus funds. Then the district should begin to pay down its $200 million in deferred maintenance out of the remaining unrestricted budget surplus. Then the community can pass a bond in 2024 to pay for a third high school, safety and security, and the remaining maintenance needs, assuming student performance has shown significant improvement. We believe this bond could be detrimental to Midland and its students, Move Midland states on its website. Given MISD's current track record of low ratings and failing schools, do you trust MISD to utilize your investment well? Rachel Walker, the board president for Move Midland, told the Reporter Telegram that the organization is very aware of the facility issues the district faces and that it has a plan to address those issues. She also stated, giving the bond without having sound academic turnaround planned is not the fiscally responsible thing to do. Move Midland isn't just about the bond. It aims to arm our community and local leaders with fact-based insights and policy-backed solutions regarding local issues affecting our citizens' tax dollars, well-being, and community vision. Organizational leaders include former Mayor Ernest Angelo and Elizabeth Moore, the daughter of another former Midland Mayor, Mike Cannon. The bond is not our main topic, Walker said. It is the topic at hand. We will be a voice in Midland to help educate our neighbors and friends on the facts behind Midland's big issues. When the Hogan Park revitalization failed, we could see miscommunication and misunderstanding in our city. Moving forward, we will do our part to inform the community so we can all move Midland forward. Move Midland's focus on the bond is for three reasons, according to its website. Midland spends more than enough. Move Midland states spending per student has increased 40% in 10 years. Midland's budget has grown more than 100%, while enrollment is up 20%. And more money for Midland means less accountability for performance. Midland ISD has already stated it expects a drop in performance when the Texas Education Agency releases rankings later this month. Midland is failing Midland's children. Move Midland states only 36% of students meet grade levels across all subjects. 42% of Midland ISD schools are projected to be D or F schools when TEA rankings come out. And Midland ISD elementary schools, built because of the 2012 bond, are all C or F rated. Midland ISD is deceiving taxpayers. Move Midland states this bond enables Midland ISD to ignore its current academic performance. Midland is putting building industry interests ahead of its students, and Midland ISD focus should primarily be academic improvements. Walker expects Move Midland will help provide a robust debate to the bond issue, which goes before the voters on November 7th. Early voting starts October 23rd. The 33-year-old will participate in the October 18th Reporter Telegram Forum about the school bond at the Carrasco Room at Midland College. She said Move Midland will use fact-based evidence and public policy-based information in its arguments about the bond or future topics. As far as the bond goes, and those who are considering it because we have to do something, Walker agrees. She just asks for another year to show academic turnaround results. She said having a school built in 2028 or 2029 is not a big difference. Let's meet halfway, Walker said. The district has to set the ship right first. You can find the Move Midland website online at www.movemidland.org. This article is entitled $7.5 million to be donated for indoor sports facility. Diamondback to give money for Midland Athletic Syndicate's project at Scarborough Sports Complex by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Diamondback Energy is proud to announce its support of the Midland Athletic Syndicate Sports Complex with a $7.5 million donation. This funding will be used to construct the building at the new facility. The MAS Sports Complex will include an indoor field and courts used primarily for local sports and tournaments, Diamondback Energy CEO Travis Stice stated in a press release. It is a facility that has been needed for our growing city to help reduce the need for area youth athletic teams to travel out of the city for games. We need to invest in our community for Midland to become the city people truly want to call home. We are proud of our Midland roots and will continue to do what we can to make Midland a place where people want to live, work, and play. The goal for MAS is to bring a first-class, multi-use sports complex to serve the community of Midland. The sports complex will be able to host tournaments, league play, provide indoor practice space and recreation space for the betterment of Midland's youth. With more than 100,000 square feet of playing surface, the facility will feature 6 full-size basketball courts, which can convert to 12 full-size volleyball courts, and 1 5-versus-5 indoor soccer arena, which can also be used as a multi-sport turf space. The complex will also offer male and female locker rooms, concessions, spectator seating, and flex rooms for meetings and education. This investment will not only benefit the children in our community by providing a safe place for them to play, but it will also benefit the local economy by giving Midland the opportunity to host tournaments and league play and give Midlanders a sports complex to be proud of and without having to travel to out-of-town venues, Stice said. The president of MAS, Austin Campbell, added, the Midland Athletic Syndicate's mission is to promote physical, mental, and social health for the Midland community by providing education, scholarships, facilities, and equipment to children and adults. This article is entitled 13th Annual Project Literacy Kicks Off at Rusk Elementary by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. The 13th Annual Project Literacy kicked off Monday with featured author Lucky Diaz visiting Rusk Elementary. Diaz is a bilingual author, songwriter, multi-Latin Grammy Award winner, Grammy-nominated and Emmy-nominated musician, and children's television personality. Project Literacy is a collaborative initiative that promotes literacy and a lifelong love of reading. Every year, Midland ISD students receive a book to keep, and each campus library receives copies of the selected books to circulate among their students. This project would not be possible without the dedicated support from Wells Fargo, Midland County Public Library Foundation, Midland ISD, Basin PBS, Midland Reporter Telegram, Fasken Foundation, and the Midland County Public Libraries. This article is entitled Burlington, New Store to Open in Midland This Fall, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Burlington is coming to Midland this fall at 3001 West Loop 250 North. A specific opening date will be announced at a later time, according to a press release. A Reporter Telegram article from September indicated that the location would open in 2024. The press release sent Monday from the Tierney Agency said the location will open this fall. The store, located in the former Bed Bath & Beyond location, will be the second Burlington in the Midland-Odessa area. There is a Burlington in Odessa's Music City Mall. Although many know Burlington Coat Factory, the company has recently rebranded to the Burlington Stores. According to the press release, the Burlington coming to Midland will include ladies' apparel and accessories, menswear, kids' clothing, home decor items, footwear for everyone, pet care tools and toys, as well as baby clothing. The Burlington coming to Midland will be the 107th location in Texas. Those interested in working at the location should visit burlingtonstores.jobs to apply online. This article is entitled Faith Church Midland to Hold Day of Faith Conference by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Faith Church Midland will host a Day of Faith conference on October 7th at the Petroleum Club. This is the first year the event is being held. It will include three worship services and prayer sessions throughout the day at 10 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Our purpose behind it is really just to bring as many people from the city of Midland together and all the surrounding cities together to help grow their faith, reignite their faith, or, for some of those out there, to learn what faith is, Johnny Paredes, senior pastor at Faith Church Midland, said. Jerry Savelle, preacher and president of Jerry Savelle Ministries International, will come to Midland from the Fort Worth area to lead the 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. services. Paredes will lead the 2 p.m. service. The event is free to attend. Please register at faithchurchmidland.com/DOF. This article is entitled Haley to Make Second Midland Appearance by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Nikki Haley will be in Midland on Thursday for her second West Texas fundraiser in 4 months. Haley follows Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in making a second fundraising trip to Midland. DeSantis unveiled his energy policy during a September 20th appearance in North Midland. The host committee reception for the former South Carolina governor and the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations is scheduled for 5:30 p.m. A general reception will take place at 6 p.m., according to an invitation to the event. The host committee includes Kelly and Harry Bettis, Kay Bird, Allison and Reese Boudreau, Penelope and Don Evans, Marion and Tim Goudeau, Rosalind Redfern Grover, Shelley and Jack Harper, Susan and Paul Lucas, Leslie and Craig McDonald, Earl and Tricia Mitchie, Dodie and Steve Mills, Carla Milson, Ellen and Scott Ramsey, Brian Sheffield, Jill and Monty Sparkman, and Rick Yaden and Becky Meister, according to the invitation. The schedule shows a host committee reception at 5:30 p.m. and a general reception at 6 p.m. $13,200, couple primary and general max. $6,600, individual primary and general max. $3,300, individual primary max. $1,500 and $250. The location will be provided upon RSVP. Those interested should contact Jennifer Nadler at jennifer@jennifernadler.com or Kate Tankersley at kate@katetankersley.com. RealClearPolitics.com shows Haley running third in its average of polls taken from September 13th through September 28th. The top five on Sunday were former President Donald Trump, 57.6%, Ron DeSantis, 13.7%, Haley, 5.6%, Vivek Ramaswamy, 4%, and Mike Pence, 4%. This article is entitled, ND Engineering Firm Gets MDC Support to Open Regional Office. Board approves agreement to bring a KLJ Engineering Regional Office, add 75 new jobs. By Mella McEwen, Business Editor. Members of the Midland Development Corporation Board of Directors set several projects in motion as a new fiscal year gets underway. Most significant on the board's agenda at its monthly meeting was the execution of an economic development agreement with KLJ Engineering of Bismarck, North Dakota, to open a regional office in Midland and create and retain 75 new jobs during the term of the agreement, which is 10 years. Following the engineering company's submission of an annual compliance certification, MDC will pay $15,000 per new full-time job created during the previous year, for a total MDC commitment of no more than $1.25 million. KLJ also received a $656,250 Texas Enterprise Fund Award and $7,000 bonus for veteran-created jobs. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris said she included the letter from the governor's office regarding the enterprise grant because the MDC's mission is to create primary jobs. I wanted to show our platform creates jobs and residual jobs. She estimated if KLJ creates 75 jobs with economic output of $30 million, the multiplier effect would result in 115 jobs and $30 million in economic output. It illustrates how primary jobs can touch other components of the Midland economy. Look at that when we're incentivizing jobs, she said. A resolution was approved authorizing Chairman Chase Gardoff to execute a consultant services agreement with Park Hill for preparation of a downtown master plan. The agreement is for an amount not to exceed $175,000 and will not take effect until approved by the Midland City Council. Board members also approved the extension of a consultant services agreement for $80,000 with the Perryman Group to produce economic indices and reports covering the city of Midland and the Permian Basin, an agreement that began in 2020. That is the most requested data from MDC, Harris said. Board members heard presentations from two organizations detailing the results of MDC investments. Dr. Timothy Benton, Regional Dean of Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, told the board, "Its investment has helped the center with its re-aim efforts, reach, effectiveness, adoption, implementation, and maintenance. Particularly in the field of mental health care, TTUHSC's efforts have had a strong impact locally, regionally, and even nationally in the form of articles published in national journals." "The reach of what you've invested in is broad," Benton said. "Sufficient space is a challenge today," he said, "and TTUHSC staff look forward to the new Permian Basin Behavioral Health Center in a couple of years. But," he cautioned, "the new center will present financial challenges in maintaining and sustaining its services. The new center will require 6 to 8 new faculty members," he estimated. "It's important we stick together as a community to invest in mental health care," he said. James Beecham, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, told the board members MDC's investment has helped his organization's effort to secure more funding for infrastructure, not just roads, but broadband to build connectivity between Midland-Odessa and the rest of the state and even the nation. "Thanks to changes in law, any extra funds from oil and gas severance taxes are returned to the regions that paid them," and Beecham said that has resulted in significant new funds. He predicted those additional funds will continue for the next couple of years before leveling off. Board members then agreed to an economic agreement with Motran, providing $142,500 for Motran to continue its efforts to secure additional infrastructure funding for the area. This article is entitled, "Odessa Man, 80, Dies in Ector County Collision," by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. An 80-year-old Odessa man died Friday after a two-vehicle collision on State Highway 302 in West Odessa, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that a 2020 Mercedes-Benz was traveling westbound on 10th Street and had stopped at the stop sign-marked intersection with State Highway 302. The Mercedes-Benz failed to yield the right-of-way at the stop sign and entered the intersection in front of a 2016 Dodge Ram 1500 traveling southbound on State Highway 302 approaching 10th Street. The Mercedes-Benz was struck on the passenger side. Larry Lee Anderson was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, where he was pronounced deceased, according to DPS. The 72-year-old driver of the Mercedes-Benz was transported to Medical Center Hospital in critical condition. No other injuries were reported. The accident happened at 4:12 p.m. in Ector County. DPS reported that all passengers involved were wearing a seatbelt. This article is entitled, "Oil Flows from Saudi Arabia, Russia Rebounded Last Month," by Julian Lee, Sherry Sue, and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia and Russia, the two nations leading OPEC plus oil cuts, boosted their crude exports last month, offering solace to a global market where supply is getting increasingly tight. The two lifted their combined crude exports by about 1 million barrels a day in September. Their collective flows remained well down on where they were as recently as July. The final number for September could be lower if some of the oil ends up going to refineries on the country's west coast. The increase in Saudi shipments from a 30-month low was expected despite an ongoing pledge to curb flows through the end of the year. Middle Eastern producers generally burn through their own crude in the summer months as domestic power demand rises for air conditioning. That can limit the amount available for export. The kingdom's seaborne crude flows climbed by more than 800,000 barrels a day, according to tanker tracking data compiled by Bloomberg. Flows from Russia's key Baltic and Black Sea ports were up by about 325,000 barrels a day. They slipped from its terminals in the Arctic and Pacific. Russian oil is currently trading at closer to $100 a barrel than a Group of Seven imposed cap of $60 a barrel. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said on Friday that the cap may be losing its sting. Saudi officials didn't immediately comment on the export figures. The kingdom's shipments to China, its top buyer, hit a five-month high. For Russia's Western exports, India was the main buyer, while its Arctic and Pacific flows are mostly en route to China. This article is entitled Rain, Cooler Temps Expected This Week by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The chance of rain this week will rise to 70% on Wednesday, according to the National Weather Service. Precipitation is expected, including a 50% chance today and a 70% chance Wednesday and Wednesday night. A slight chance of precipitation remains in the forecast through Friday night. The NWS also expects cooler temperatures, including a high of 68 degrees on Saturday, around 10 degrees below normal for this time of year. Lows Saturday and Sunday could fall into the 50s. Monday's report, Monday's high 86 degrees, typical for October 7th, 84 degrees. Monday's low, 68. Typical low for October 2nd, 60. Record high for October 2nd, 101 degrees in 2000. Last 3 days. Saturday, 89 degrees. Sunday, 88. Monday, 86. Next 3 days. Tuesday, 86 degrees. Wednesday, 86. Thursday, 79. Rainfall. Monday, 0 inch. This month, 0 inch. This year, 2.80 inches. Normal through October 2nd, 10.88 inches. Upcoming rainfall chances. Tuesday, 50% during the day, 30% at night. Wednesday, 70% during the day and 70% at night. Thursday, 40% during the day, slight chance at night. Warm September. The National Weather Service reports that September 2023 will be the third warmest in Midland's history. While the average monthly temperature in September is 76.2 degrees, the NWS showed an average of 81.3 degrees this past month. The following are the warmest Septembers on record in Midland. 1977, 82.1 degrees. 2019, 81.5 degrees. 2023, 81.3 degrees. 1931, 80.2 degrees. The source of this article, the National Weather Service. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, U.S. Refiners Facing Heavy Fall Maintenance Season. Nearly 2.5 million barrels a day of refining capacity to shut for fall maintenance. By Barbara Powell, Bloomberg. The fall refinery maintenance season in the U.S. is shaping up to be the heaviest since before the COVID-19 pandemic forced plants to slash rates and delay all but emergency work. Nearly 2.5 billion barrels a day of refining capacity will go offline for maintenance from September through December, according to data from Energy Aspects Ltd. That's 11% higher than the same period last year. Looking ahead, the first quarter of 2024 is projected by some to be the heaviest maintenance season ever, loaded with deferred work and regularly scheduled turnarounds on crude units, gasoline-making fluid catalytic crackers, cokers, and others. That could kickstart a race to lock down available contractors. This fall's packed schedule is partly a result of repairs on units hobbled by unplanned leaks, multiple fires, and the overall stress of running hard during an unusually hot summer. Refiners also must work through a backlog of turnarounds after delaying maintenance to save money during the pandemic and later to chase strong margins as the economy improved. In 2023, we're seeing a lot of unplanned outages, said Austin Lin, principal analyst for refining and oil markets at Wood Mackenzie. There's been a continued tendency to defer and minimize maintenance where possible. Now, as refining margins come off their highs, plants can start going down for repairs. The 3-2-1 futures crack spread has slipped to about $23 a barrel Monday, down from more than $43 on August 11th. While diesel margins remain relatively strong, those for gasoline are plunging with summer's end. Routine maintenance like changing out catalysts and cleaning out cokers has to be done regularly. Full turnarounds that traditionally occur every 4 to 6 years can only be postponed for so long without risking chronic upsets that can shut units down for weeks. The day of reckoning has come, said Andy Lipow, president of Lipow Oil Associates in Houston. Now they have to do the maintenance. As of Friday, an average of 526,000 barrels per day of U.S. processing capacity was expected to be offline for planned work in September, 1.48 million barrels in October, 452,000 barrels in November, and nothing in December, according to Energy Aspects. The data only include confirmed maintenance. Actual amounts will likely swell if more work is added or unplanned shutdowns occur from unit upsets, power glitches, or storms. Shell's Norco refinery, north of New Orleans, pushed a turnaround on its sole crude unit to late September from a late March start because product margins were robust, a person familiar with operations said. Exxon Baytown and Motiva Port Arthur in Texas also began maintenance on big crude units last week. The pandemic taught refiners many hard lessons about the unpredictability of the market. With the U.S. losing about 1.2 million barrels of capacity from outright closures between 2019 and 2022. Another 300,000 barrels were lost because of upgrades to add capacity that never happened, said Robert Auers, manager of Refined Fuels Analytics, a division of RBN Energy. One unknown every fall is whether a major tropical storm will take out more capacity on the U.S. Gulf Coast during the Atlantic hurricane season. The last year that Gulf production areas were spared a tropical storm strike, which can knock out large amounts of production for days at a time, was 2014. This is the Life Tributes column. James Stewart Buchanan, Jr., October 13, 1946 to September 29, 2023. Memorial services will be held at 12 p.m. on Tuesday, October 3rd, at Delholm's Chapel of the Flowers for James Jim Stewart Buchanan, 76. A visitation with family will be held from 9 a.m. until the start of the service. He passed away on September 29th at the Carpenter House of Acadiana. Pastor Weldon Moak will conduct the services. Interment will take place at a later date. Jim, a resident of Lafayette, Louisiana, was the son of the late James Buck Buchanan and the former Ruby Reed. Jim was born in Jackson, Mississippi in 1946 and grew up in Abbeville, Louisiana, where he graduated from Abbeville High School in 1964. He is survived by his wife of 57 years, Phyllis Lean Buchanan, his children, Christine Jean Mard, spouse Jim Jean Mard, and Brett Buchanan, spouse Cindy Buchanan, as well as 9 grandchildren, his sister Karen Buchanan Niveau, spouse Lavelle Niveau. He is also survived by Gracie, his beloved Bijan Fries. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to St. Jude Children's Hospital. Personal condolences may be sent to the Buchanan family at www.delholmfuneralhome.com. James Stewart Buchanan Jr. and his family were cared for and entrusted final arrangements to Delholm Funeral Home, 1011 Bertrand Drive, Lafayette, Louisiana. Heidi Olivia South, May 5th, 1942, to September 27, 1923. Heidi Olivia South passed away on September 27th at the age of 81 in Bellefonte, Pennsylvania. She was born on May 5, 1942 in Whitehall, Wisconsin, to Hiram B. and Joan M. Hegg. She came to Texas and married James R. South on March 10, 1963 in Midland. Jim passed away on February 14, 1996. Heidi moved to Pennsylvania in the summer of 2023 to be closer to her daughters and their families in Pittsburgh and Bellefonte. Heidi is survived by her daughters Jennifer South and Joni South Shelley, son-in-law Kurt Shelley, granddaughter Claire Shelley, and grandson Nicholas South. She is also survived by 4 sisters, Lynn Foss, Jerry, Joe Braun, Kristen Helgeson, Tom, and Jan Sikora, and 1 brother, Mark H. Hegg, Sue. She was predeceased by her parents and her husband. At her request, no funeral service will be held. Flowers and condolences may be sent to 428 East Lamb Street, Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, 16823, or donations may be made to a charity of your choice. Jack Cartwright. Jack Cartwright, 93, of Midland, passed away Saturday, September 30th. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, October 4th, at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, October 5th, at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Victor Castillo. Victor Castillo, age 75 of Midland, went to be with the Lord September 28th. Visitations will be held Tuesday, October 3rd, starting at 2 p.m. until 8 p.m., and Wednesday, October 4th, from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held Thursday, October 5th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Jimmy Alvin Hare. Jimmy Alvin Hare, 82, of Gardendale, passed away on September 27th at Parks Assisted Living Center in Odessa. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. on October 3rd at American Heritage Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family kindly requests that you consider making a donation to an animal shelter or rescue organization of your choice in honor of Jimmy Alvin Hare. Antonio H. Martinez. Antonio H. Martinez, 85, of Stanton, passed away on September 29th. Visitation were held Monday, October 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 3rd, at St. Joseph Catholic Church, with Deacon Ignacio Villa officiating. Interment will follow at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Delfina Mora. Delfina Mora of Midland died on October 1st in Odessa. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, October 4th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, with Deacon Victor Lopez officiating. Burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
This is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 3rd. Oil show, solar eclipse, big for Odessa. If it's not the greatest show on earth, like the heyday of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, the Permian Basin International Oil Show is close. The energy industry's top technology extravaganza will hit the Ector County Coliseum October 17th through 19th and bring in 30,000-plus oil and gas professionals from across the nation and world, bringing Odessa an economic impact of at least $14.4 million. As every hotel and motel room is rented in a 60-mile radius, and the restaurants and bars stay packed. Couple that with an as yet unknown but no doubt huge influx of visitors to see the Saturday, October 14th solar eclipse from one of the best 5 vantage points in Texas, and the City of Contrasts is guaranteed a boffo week. Discover Odessa director Monica Tisnauer and oil show president Larry Richards say the ducks are all lined up. Tisnauer said, all of Odessa's 4,613 hotel and motel rooms have already been rented for the oil show, and an overflow of participants will be driving in from Andrews, Seminole, Monahans, and other area towns with the 2021 exhibitions attendance of 16,000 expected at least to double now that the pandemic is history. The oil show people will start coming on the 13th to set up the large equipment they'll bring to the Coliseum, said Tisnauer, who manages the conventions and tourism for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. The direct impact from 21 was $7,179,869 when we had 8,953 room nights, and it is a lot bigger this time. We had 30,000 in 18 when the weather was cloudy, rainy, and cold. It's the largest event that comes to Odessa every 2 years. The oil and gas companies hire bands and throw parties for their vendors and clients all over town. I think we'll see at least 30,000 again. It's a very big to-do for the city this week. Tisnauer said NASA Solar System Exploration has been promoting Odessa, Midland, San Angelo, San Antonio, and Corpus Christi as the best places in Texas to view the annular or partial eclipse when the moon comes between the Earth and Sun for 7 minutes, starting at 11:45 October 14th. We are trying to prepare our community because Tennessee had this 2 years ago, and they had 30 million visitors from out of state, she said. Richards expects a record turnout for the oil show. While most of our residents are used to the influx of visitors every other year, many don't know why so many industry professionals travel from across the U.S. and globe to Odessa, he said. The United States is on pace to have the highest oil production in its history this year, and the Permian Basin leads the nation with huge gains in volume and efficiency. The shocker is that much of these gains are from fields discovered in the 1920s, and massive leaps in technology and innovation have unlocked huge volume wells in fields previously considered depleted. While most of the major technological advances used to occur in offshore and international markets, most of the advances over the past decade were born within 150 miles of Odessa. Our entrepreneurial spirit and the unique West Texas work ethic drive innovation, and that innovation and new technology are on display at PBIOS like nowhere else. Held every 2 years, so lots of new things can be shown, Richard said PBIOS admittance and parking for the show will be free to all adults working in the industry. I've personally been contacted by executives from as far away as Libya and Guyana who plan to attend, he said. We'll have hundreds of engineers, executives, and field personnel from every basin across America, and it will be the only time that many of these visitors ever see or visit our city and experience true West Texas hospitality. Richard commended Ector County leaders for repainting and updating the Coliseum. While it's a great start, we hope that this venue will, with so much history, can continue being updated and improved to be a show place that our community and the 700-plus exhibitors at PBIOS can be proud of, he said. Unaccompanied Veteran Burial, Killeen, the Central Texas State Veteran Cemetery, 11,463 Fort Hood Street in Killeen, will conduct an unaccompanied veteran burial for U.S. Army Corporal Merrill Dwayne Forrest at 11 a.m. sharp October 5th. Born on April 3, 1937, Corporal Forrest served from September 1954 to October 1963. Corporal Forrest is not expected to have any next of kin attend his burial. Members of the Killeen community are encouraged to attend. Corporal Forrest will receive military honors. If no next of kin is present at the burial, a Veterans Land Board representative will accept the United States flag on his behalf. The Texas Veterans Land Board works with the local communities and fellow veterans service organizations to ensure that no veteran is ever left behind. Spurlock named one of the top 50 women leaders in education. UT Permian Basin is thrilled to announce that Becky Spurlock, Senior Vice President of Student Affairs and Enrollment Management at UTPB, has been named as one of the top 50 women leaders in education in 2023 by Women We Admire. Finding a career in higher education has provided a purpose and direction for my life that I never imagined. To be honored for the work is icing on the cake. I'm thrilled to share this recognition with so many incredible leaders from across the country who are making a difference in this field every day, Spurlock said in a news release. This award highlights the accomplishments of women who are at the helm of educational institutions across the nation. These women leaders come from a broad spectrum of organizations, spanning from small liberal arts colleges to our nation's largest public universities, including Ivy League institutions and beyond. Dr. Spurlock is so deserving of this recognition, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in their release. UTPB is lucky to have such a passionate leader who always puts students first. We are thankful for the work she does every day to ensure that students from the best have the best experience at every stage of their journey from recruitment to career. At UTPB, Spurlock oversees the enrollment management teams comprised of admissions, financial aid and scholarships, the registrar's office, and online programs. In addition, she leads student affairs, student success, and the Shepherd Leadership Institute teams. She also holds an appointment as an assistant professor in the Department of Educational Leadership in the College of Education. Prior to joining UT Permian Basin, Spurlock served in several leadership roles at public and private universities in both Texas and Tennessee. As a first-generation college student, she believes in the transformational power of higher education. An educator, sought-after speaker, and leader in the field of student affairs, she regularly teaches, speaks, and consults on developing community leadership, strategic planning, and assessment. Spurlock has more than 25 years' experience in student affairs. A high-energy speaker, she is known for her ability to engage audiences, address difficult topics, and connect through humor. Kane's proceeds going to breast cancer research. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Raising Cane's will donate $100,000 of Monday's net proceeds to the University of Pennsylvania's Abramson Cancer Center, a world leader in cancer research, patient care, and education. The brand encourages customers to stop by their local Raising Cane's October 2nd to help support breast cancer research and awareness. Raising Cane's will make its donation in the name of 34-year-old breast cancer survivor Kate Corson, the Philadelphia native who was diagnosed with stage 3 triple negative breast cancer just 1 week before her 34th birthday, began receiving treatment at the Abramson Cancer Center in January, the same treatment facility her mother was treated 17 years prior for rectal cancer. Kate enrolled in the 1x2 clinical trial, a faster, less toxic treatment regime that allowed her to receive a new type of therapy and proceed to surgery after only 4 infusions. The trial was overseen by Penn Medicine teams for female physicians and nearly eliminated her cancer entirely. Kate now begins preventative care, which includes several weeks of radiation and chemotherapy. The Abramson Cancer Center is doing great work in preventative care, research, and patient care for cancers of all types. Raising Cane's founder Todd Graves said in a news release, "In recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we are proud to celebrate and honor those currently battling breast cancer as well as survivors like Kate by supporting UPenn's ongoing effort in saving the lives of those fighting breast cancer. To support Raising Cane's donation efforts, customers are encouraged to visit Raising Cane's Monday during regular operational hours. The donation will be automatically applied to all orders, and customers do not need to mention the donation. To find a location nearest you, visit raisingcanes.com/locations. Odessa indicted in death of baby girl. A 37-year-old Odessa woman who was arrested in June following the death of a 6-week-old girl in a wreck has been indicted on intoxication, manslaughter, and bribery charges. Daisy Denise Cordero was booked into the Ector County Jail Friday morning and released the same day. She's scheduled to be arraigned October 10th in the 70th District Court. According to an Odessa Police Department report, Cordero was driving a Lexus RX350 when she rear-ended a Chevrolet Cruze that had stopped at a red light on Grandview at Maple Avenue around 11:15 p.m. Ileana Garcia was in the backseat of the Chevy along with a one-year-old boy. According to OPD, the boy and the 19-year-old driver of the Chevy were taken to Medical Center Hospital and treated for their injuries. The baby was flown to a Lubbock hospital where she later died. Clodera was arrested in a nearby pasture after witnesses pointed her out, the report stated. She smelled of alcohol, had red glassy eyes, appeared confused, was unsteady on her feet, and was slurring her words. She performed poorly on field sobriety test, the report stated. According to the report, Clodera said she'd had 4 shots of tequila at the Marriott Hotel and knew she shouldn't have been driving. She also repeatedly told the officers she would perform sexual favors every day in return for letting her go.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.